a brighter day is here. Good morning, may we bring you cheer.
We've got time, we've got tunes, we've got time, tunes, and temperature.
Get up and go, it's today, you know, on KSCO Radio.
If you compare the cost of living with the wages of work, you come up with the fact that Santa Cruz in the Monterey Bay Area is one of the most expensive places to live in the United States. And when it gets right down to it, many who live here can't afford to live here. So today we ask, what on earth are we going to do about it?
Good morning. Now stay right here on KSCO Radio.
Recently, in the city of Santa Cruz, 47 businesses commissioned a company, Civic Economics, to study the possible impacts of a proposed minimum wage raise. The ramifications, it seems, are enormous, with huge cuts in city services, and possibly more to follow. Local merchants feel this is a step in the direction that will cause them to withdraw benefits, such as health care and other perks to employees.
Look at that, yo-yos.
And may drive some businesses from the city altogether, thus lowering the tax base. Join us this Saturday on the Saturday Special from 10 a.m. to noon with guest host Michael Olson, as we have a plethora of guests to discuss this very important local issue. That's this Saturday on the Saturday Special from 10 a.m. to noon on your Money for Nothing and your Kicks for Free radio station, AM 1080 KSCO.
Folks, it costs a lot of money to live around here. I mean, it is one of the most expensive places in the world to live. And how do we know? Because what they do is they take the cost of living and they compare it with the wages and they come up with an index. And the index always lists Santa Cruz way up there at the top. Members of the Santa Cruz City Council have come up with what they believe is a solution to this untenable problem, which is to raise the minimum wage by 37%, and are passing around a petition and supporting those who are passing this petition around to put this solution on the ballot. Members of the Santa Cruz business community have responded with good intentions, bad idea here, and have commissioned a survey to see what these good intentions will do for business. Today we ask each and every one of you, what do you think will happen if Santa Cruz raises the minimum wage by 37%? Well, welcome to the Saturday Special. Michael Olson sitting in for Michael Zwirling today. We've got engineer Ricochet on the boards. Rick?
Good morning.
And we have producer Carol Stafford on the phones, but she's out on the phones and can't say hello. Like I said, Michael Olson, and today I'm honored to have Neil Coonerty, who is the owner of Bookshop Santa Cruz. Neil has been handling my writings since 1977, so I feel like I've been working with this guy for a long, long time. Welcome to the Saturday Special, Neil.
Thanks very much, Michael.
Oops, better let me turn on your microphone. That again.
Okay, thank you very much, Michael.
Neil, you've been quoted as saying that with respect to this proposed raising of the minimum wage, that this is as large an economic issue as Santa Cruz has faced since the earthquake in 1989. Wow.
Well, I think it's a case of people trying to do something that's good, which is get more money in pockets of people that work here. But there's a lot of consequences, because I think the process has been terrible and they've ended up with a bad proposal. And that proposal is going to have a lot of effect on a lot of things, from how many businesses will be operating in the city of Santa Cruz, what prices there'll be in the city, how many jobs there are, really what kind of community we have. If it ends up that there's a migration of jobs and businesses outside the city of Santa Cruz, then Santa Cruz will end up being a very wealthy bedroom community for San Jose, where people live in the city, but that they shop and work elsewhere. And that's not the kind of community that I wanted to live in, and it's not the kind of community that we rebuilt after the earthquake.
No, it sure isn't. And you got together with some fellow business people, business owners throughout the Santa Cruz community, and you're commissioning a survey, correct? Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, we felt that when the proponents propose this law, and they're out getting signatures, so they have a very defined language for the law that can't be changed once they gather their signatures, we felt that they really raised more questions than it had answers, that they didn't do a study. They didn't find out what the consequences were. And we felt we had to move. So a lot of businesses got together. I think it's been 47. I think it's more than 50 now. Donated from $500 to $1,000 a piece. It's a really a grassroots effort amongst the businesses. And we commissioned Civic Economics. And anybody that wants to look at their work and see who they are, you can go to www.civiceconomics.com.
Well, we're going to do better than that, Neil, because we have Dan Houston from Civic Economics on. So he can perhaps tell us a little bit about how he intends to survey this information. But before we go to Dan, I'd like to let the audience know that KSCO has gone to great lengths to secure participation in this show by those who wish to put this initiative on the ballot. We have called and emailed Tony Madrigal, Emily Riley, Tim Fitzmaurice, and Nora Hawkman, and we have done so time after time after time throughout the week without a single response. So evidently they are simply not interested in communicating, which seems to blow my mind, because when you put an initiative of this magnitude with these potential consequences on the table, it would seem like you would like to fight for position in the market.
Well, you know, one of our disappointments about this whole proposal is there's not been a community conversation. That when Nora started going around and introducing this proposition to a number of business people, she definitely said, the language is not going to change. This is what we're going to propose. We're just letting you know. And that conversation, you know, progressive politics, a basic tenet is that you have these conversations, you do the grassroots efforts, you find out what the problems are, you incorporate people's ideas. And they were completely unwilling. This is a small group of people that are trying to impose this on the community without input, and this is reflective of the fact they don't want to sit down and talk with people about this proposal. I'm really disappointed they didn't show up.
Well, let's go to Dan Houston, who is a partner with Civic Economics, who has been commissioned to study the possible impact of this initiative on the Santa Cruz business climate. Dan, welcome to the Saturday special right here on AM 1080 KSCO.
And good morning.
Pleasure to have you aboard. Where are you?
In Austin, Texas.
Austin, Texas. Oh, nice neck of the woods. I love that hill country down there.
It's a lovely place.
Well, Dan, talk to us here in Santa Cruz. You've been commissioned to study the possible impacts of this initiative to raise the minimum wages, 37% here in Santa Cruz. How do you intend to go about doing an objective survey of these consequences?
Well, you know, I'm glad you opened with the word objective, because as far as from our perspective, that's obviously the most important piece. And I think it's to the credit of the businesses and the nonprofits who are funding this, that when we first had a discussion with them about this, and Neil and I were on the phone, Neil, I don't know, probably the first time was a month or so ago, we emphasized that, you know, when you there are firms out there that you can tell them the answer you're looking for and be absolutely confident that...
Would you give me the name of one of those companies? I'd like to hire them.
Absolutely not. But there are we do have competitors out there, you know, and it's fine. It's a business model that you can sell your credibility. We are 100% not that firm. And so we made it clear that the way we approach any study of this sort is we will put together what we think is the best methodology for getting to the information. And then we'll give you that answer. We will follow those numbers where they lead us. And to their credit, this is a group of people that was perfectly happy to trust us to follow the numbers where they lead. So objectivity is obviously the key to this from our perspective, and I assume from the perspective of the folks in Santa Cruz there.
Mm-hmm. So how are you going to get the information? What kind of questions are you going to ask? This is really an interesting study. How are you going to do it?
Well, now, essentially what we need to find out is we're going to look at a pretty broad cross-section of businesses in, or actually, you know, employers in mm-hmm. Santa Cruz. And we're going to be able to identify how much this is going to alter their labor costs. Because essentially what we need to figure out is how will businesses and their customers respond to the change in labor costs. Take a bookstores are a great example, and we've dealt with bookstores in a number of cities around the country. If you were to go to Bookshop Santa Cruz and tell him his rent goes up 35%, oddly enough, he can't change the price of his books to accommodate that. A book, you know, is the same price whether it's in Manhattan or East Tulsa. The book says $15, it's a $15 book. So Neil will have to adapt in his store in different ways to the fact that the bottom level labor cost changes. We're going to do in-depth interviews with, I'm not sure how many businesses, I think we're probably going to end up with 10 or 15, where we really sit down with the business owner and look at their books and figure out how their money moves within the business. We're also going to survey a much broader range of businesses with similar information, because our goal is going to be to figure out, number one, how will the business adapt to that changing labor cost? How will it change their total cost of doing business?
Mm-hmm.
And then we're going to try to get a good feel by modeling the retail environment in Santa Cruz and in the region for how customers will respond, because price sensitivity is an issue. And I got to tell you, I've never been to Santa Cruz. I understand it's a lovely town. It's as weird as Austin. You know, but
listen,
we're gonna
are
model
the king
local
of weird
and try
here.
To figure out. I'm sorry, go ahead.
We're the king of weird. Let me ask you this. Have you ever done anything like this before with respect to raising the minimum wage 37%?
Well, it would be hard to have done this study before because not many communities have gone down this road. We've begun looking at other studies for other communities that have changed. I mean, I think it's probably well known in Santa Cruz that Santa Fe, New Mexico has significantly raised its local minimum wage, and San Francisco, just up the road, mm-hmm. has established a baseline minimum wage within the city as well. They're not particularly analogous situations because, and we've dealt with Santa Fe in the past, Santa Fe is essentially an island in a mountainous, arid region. So if people in Santa Fe wanted to change their habit, if customers in Santa Fe wanted to change their habits because they're price sensitive, pretty big sacrifice to go to the next place with
right.
options. Santa Cruz, you know, we're going to model the retail environment and see what's near you, what other choices consumers will have.
And there are many. Are you going to, when you interview these businesses, are you going to select kind of a cross-section representative of the community as you would if you were surveying, you know, for the election results, for example?
Yeah, it's going to be because we're actually going to be on the ground in Santa Cruz for 5 days, so we'll have a lot of time to sit down with a lot of business owners, and we're going to do I know at least one nonprofit, a manufacturing kind of business, so we'll get a pretty good sample of mm-hmm. the businesses in Santa Cruz.
That's what I was curious about, whether you're going to do a manufacturing business, you know, a retail business like Neil's.
Yeah, and I think there'll be restaurants included.
Restaurants.
Absolutely, yeah.
You know, and we're going to do this study. These people have a great reputation. They've worked with communities where they studied the impact of how big box stores and chain stores affect locally owned businesses. And when this study is done, it's going to be presented to the whole community, and it's going to be a transparent process, and the report will be there for people to read, we hope. You know, the credibility of this report is important to us. And right from the beginning, Civic Economics has talked about they're going where the numbers take them. We have a lot of concerns, a lot of questions that we hope that this report answers, but it's going to be an honest report.
Good. Also joining us today, Larry Pearson from Pacific Cookie Company. I was talking earlier how Neil's been selling my book since 1977, and I've been eating your cookies forever, too. So how long have
Please
I been eating
stop.
Your cookies?
You've been eating my cookies probably since 1980. That's when we opened.
1980, good.
Yeah.
So long-time members of the community. And wanted to ask also Dan Houston, who's the partner of Civic Economics, are you going to be surveying manufacturing businesses in the Santa Cruz community as well?
Well, of course, now within the city of Santa Cruz, you're not exactly a manufacturing hotbed. So I do think that Pacific Cookie is one of the companies that, that we're going to get to talk to while we're out there.
And I'm a manufacturer, right.
And he is a manufacturer, which is something I was really curious about with respect to the community in general. So you're going to visit a number of businesses. You're going to survey a bunch of other businesses. You're going to be as objective as possible. Neil, what are the questions that you really want to answer here?
Well,
Neil and Larry,
some of the fears we have is that it's these negative unintended consequences that that in fact nonprofits are going to have it's going to impact them in a major way. And going to cause some real difficulty for nonprofits to operate within the city. And retailers, restaurants, some manufacturers, and it is this fear that that their losses are if they're unable to sustain themselves, because there's an index here, that every year this will go up and up and up.
So this is not just we're not talking about just raising the minimum wage 37%. We're talking about raising the minimum wage 37% and then tacking on a yearly cost of living increase as well.
Yes, within a very short time, it'll be up to like $15 an hour, beginning wage, fresh out of high school and starting work, and it keeps going up. There is no cap on this situation. And you have to understand, Santa Cruz will be an island. Around it, the whole county will be on the California minimum wage, which may, there's now a proposal to raise the California minimum wage, but that discrepancy is going to grow year by year.
Dan, you were talking about San Francisco and Albuquerque?
Santa Fe.
Santa Fe. Well, those communities are islands, in effect. San Francisco is out there in a peninsula by itself. If you want to go to dinner someplace else, you have to go way someplace else. And why would you want to do that anyway? So, and Santa Fe similarly is an island to itself, but Santa Cruz is not. Is that one of the questions you're really going to focus on? Is the competitive situation of a business in Santa Cruz and a business in Capitola, Aptos, Scotts Valley, Felton, and so on?
Absolutely. That's one of the first things we need to get a handle on as we arrive in the city. We're going to come in, I think we'll see Highway 17 and Highway 1, the Pacific Coast Highway, and see the connections between, and I guess to the east you have urbanized areas as well. So we're going to need to see very well how mobile are consumers in your region and workers in your region. So
depends on
that's
the time
absolutely
of day around
to
here.
Yeah. Also, I wanted to point out that while Santa Fe and San Francisco have a minimum wage, that there's other communities, Santa Monica in particular, that had one put on the ballot and the voters rejected it. After a lot of discussion down there, because they felt it was unhealthy for the community, so we hope the voters in Santa Cruz will take a real hard look at this proposal.
I noticed that in other articles on this subject that the people who are pushing this proposal via a budget or a initiative process are not talking about it. Tony Madrigal, Emily Riley, Tim Fitzmaurice, Nora Hawkman, the people that are really spearheading this effort are not participating in a community dialogue. And I find that kind of puzzling, why somebody would put such an impactful issue on the table and then not talk about it. It reminds me of when I was a student body president in junior college and it was time to run for re-election again, and instead of putting ourselves on the ballot, we didn't tell anybody about it until it was the election day, and then said, hey, it's time for election, and we won in a landslide. Is that what they're trying to do, Larry?
Well, we've been disappointed from the beginning that there was no effort to engage in any kind of dialogue to decide how this might be economically feasible, how it might be reasonable to have a separate minimum wage, separate from the state of California, which is separate from the federal minimum wage of $5.15. And the unwillingness of the individuals that framed this proposition to change any part of it, regardless of input. I'm sure they regret the negative impacts on our businesses because they're also patrons of ours. But that is not changing their attitude toward the proposition. It is, as Nora has very eloquently stated, a bit of labor advocacy. Mm-hmm. It's not a product of conversation, of compromise. It's not a result of examination of economic consequences or what might be the impacts of such an action. It is really advocating for the poorest among us, giving them a voice that they believe needs to be heard. Now, those are admirable goals, but unfortunately the consequences to many of us, especially those of us in small business, will be rather significant. Well, there's a better way to go about this.
You know, if you look at the demographics of the world, in Santa Cruz in particular, you see that there are many workers and few employers. How's it going to be possible to stop something like this?
Well, I think that some progressive leaderships have called this plan a flawed proposal, but maybe politically irresistible. We don't feel like the voters in Santa Cruz should not be talked to. We feel like they can make a decision. They can take a look at the effects of it.
Santa Monica did.
We're going to be portrayed as against raising the minimum wage, and that's not who we are. That's not how we took a straw vote at the LOBA, the locally owned business association, and they don't feel that way. In fact, we prove it because very few of us pay minimum wage. We may pay under $9.25, but we're not paying minimum wage here. And we're not against the state proposal as far as minimum wage is concerned. What we really want to do is hope that the voters will take a real hard look at what this really radical proposal of $2.50 an hour imposed immediately with indexing so that every year it goes up probably by 25 to 30 cents an hour, what it really has an effect, long-term effect on Santa Cruz.
Well, Dan Houston, partner with Civic Economics, you're the man that's really going to be looking at this. And the parameters of your survey, objectivity, right?
Absolutely.
It's probably the single most important thing, because if somebody catches a little bit of subjectivity, it won't be worth the price of a cookie. I was going to say cookie, but I wouldn't do it. We just want to thank you for joining us today. Any further questions or comments for Dan before we let him go?
No, we look forward to seeing him here in Santa Cruz. And you never like opening up your books to an outsider, but he's going to take a good hard look at these numbers and give us some answers. We're very anxious to get answers.
Okay. Dan, thanks for tuning in today.
Thanks very much for having me.
All right, appreciate it. Folks, this is the Saturday special. Michael Olson sitting in for Michael's Whirling today right here on AM 1080 KSCO. We're talking about a proposal to raise the minimum wage here in Santa Cruz. Let's see, from $6.75 an hour to $9.25 an hour. Is that right, gentlemen?
That's correct.
That's a 37% increase in the cost of minimum wages. So when we come back, we're going to talk with Neil Coonerty, who is the owner of Bookshop Santa Cruz, and also Larry Pearson, who is the owner of Pacific Cookie Company, longtime Santa Cruz business people. And we're going to see what they believe the impact will be on their businesses and the businesses of those around them. Do stay tuned. We will be right back after these important messages. And, hey, thanks for joining the Saturday special. We will open up the phones in the next hour, or the next half hour. Phone numbers today, 479-1080, 477-1340. Pick them up and give us a ring. I'd love to hear from you. Thank you very much.
Attention all business owners in Santa Cruz County, or anyone who's feeling the squeeze due to a lack of space. Right now you can get 1,750 square feet of storage and warehouse space in the Live Oak area near 17th and Bromer. This space will provide 24-hour access to a secure 1,750 square foot warehouse with a small office and bathroom. The rent includes free hot and cold water, sewer service, office trash disposal, broadband internet access, and a telephone.
telephone extension on a shared phone system, complete with unlimited long distance, voicemail, and off-site paging. The building is cinder block construction with a concrete slab floor. There are skylights, fluorescent lights, two metal entry doors, and a wide metal roll-up door with parking and much more. So, if you're a local entrepreneur who's feeling the squeeze or just needs to expand, give Sam a call at 465-7340. That's 465-7340.
Attention Santa Cruz and Monterey counties. The Aptos and Capitolis Oquel Chambers are celebrating the 21st year of the greatest showcase on earth, and you're invited to the party. Over 100 businesses and service organizations will be on hand from 4 to 7:30 p.m. on February 9th at the Capitola Mall, offering valuable information and services available to you. Don't miss this opportunity to learn about the very businesses and organizations in your community, all under one roof. Don't miss the gourmet food and wine pavilion, cake decorating contest, and much, much more. The Business Showcase comes around once a year and draws thousands to this fun and informative evening. That's right, the greatest showcase on earth will be back on February 9th, 2006. And we'll be celebrating 21 years of bringing businesses to the forefront and creating an opportunity like no other. Presented by PG&E and KSCO-KOMY. Call the Aptos or Capitola Soquel Chamber of Commerce, 688-1467 or 475-6522.
Hi, this is Don Fredrickson from GotNet. GotNet's been serving the Monterey Bay since 1994 with high-quality, affordable Internet service. We have modem coverage for all of California and web-based email, so you can check your email from any Internet connection in the world. Our spam filtering and virus protection services will keep your inbox free from unwanted messages. GotNet specializes in providing high-quality, fast, friendly customer support. We're here 7 days a week to serve you. Call GotNet today at 460-2000. Food, shelter, clothing, net. GotNet.
Now back to the Saturday special with your host, Michael Olson.
Hey, welcome back. This is the Saturday special. Michael Olson sitting in for Michael's Whirling today. Michael is out and about in the world someplace. Who knows? Today we're talking about the proposal to raise the minimum wage in Santa Cruz from $6.75 an hour to $9.25. That is a 37% increase in the cost of the minimum wage. And we're also looking at the possibility that if this initiative passes, there will be a cost of living raise every year thereafter until eternity, which is a long time. That could be a lot of money if you hung around for that long. So today we're asking the really basic question, what impact do you think raising the minimum wage 37% will have on the business community of Santa Cruz? And I guess you could look around the Monterey Bay Area and Central California and pretty much ask the same question of your own community. Today, for today's show, KSCO's executive producer, Rosemary Chalmers, tried very hard to get the proponents of this initiative to sit in on the program. She talked with Tony Madrigal, Emily Riley, Tim Fitzmaurice, Nora Hawkman, a number of times, or called them a number of times, emailed them, sent smoke signals, runners, you know, as many ways as possible to get a hold of these people, but they just simply did not respond at all. And so another thing we're curious about is why do you think they refused participation in a discussion on such an impactful proposition? Why do you think that they are running and hiding in the bushes and not talking about this issue that they're putting on the table? Interested to hear what you have to say. Phone number is today 479-1080, 477-1340. Larry, you know, I did a program on the food chain once about how starlings came to America. And turn of the last century, around 1900, there was an astronomer who lived in New York City. And aside from looking at the stars, he had two great loves. One was Shakespeare, and the other was birds. And walking in Central Park. So he got to thinking, wouldn't it be nice if you, when you walk through Central Park, you saw all the birds in Shakespeare's plays? So that way, you could look up into a tree and see a bird and be reminded of a play or a part in a play. Well, it so happens that in one of Shakespeare's plays, in one line, there is a brief mention of starlings. So true to his thought, this astronomer went to Europe and collected a couple dozen starlings. And he brought them back to the United States and turned them loose. And now there are flocks of millions and millions of starlings in the United States. So can there be such a thing as good intentions and bad ideas?
Well, that's certainly the way we feel about the proposal that's going to be in front of the voters in November. it's really hard to disagree with someone that says or asks you the question, should the minimum wage be increased? I don't think there's anyone that would ever pretend to believe that a minimum wage is a living wage or that it's easy to raise a family on minimum wage or close to it. The problem that we see with this is there are a multitude of problems, but two especially concern us, not just the 37% one-time increase, where if that were our rent, we'd go absolutely crazy, but the two things. One is creating an island economy, and Santa Cruz having a substantially different wage structure than the rest of the county. And the rest of Northern California, with the exception of San Francisco and, I believe, Berkeley. I compete in all those markets, and so for me, it's a competitive disadvantage. This creates a competitive disadvantage. But to other businesses, especially restaurants, who really don't have the ability to just pick up and move, the consequences are extraordinary because all that money for their employees has to be paid for by the diner. They have no other way to go here. And so prices will increase, and their ability to compete with the myriad of restaurants that exist just outside the city will be significantly impacted. And the other thing that is just what I characterized a while ago as fiscal lunacy is to index a cost for the indefinite future to an index you can't predict nor control. And in business, when you take your largest single variable cost, which is your labor cost, and attach it to that kind of escalator, which impacts your entire salary structure, not just the very bottom of it, well, that gives you no ability to react to economic downturns, to acts of God like earthquakes and planes hitting buildings, not exactly an act of God, if you will, but all those unexpected negative things that happen in the life of a business. You lose a single biggest weapon to deal with that and survive, and that is either freeze salaries or at least control the growth of salaries until your market can respond to what other opportunities that you try and create for yourself. It means that for somebody like me who would have the ability to leave Santa Cruz, because I am a manufacturer when my lease is up, that if this passes, and by the way, it can't be changed in any way other than by a vote of the voters, that 10 years after I move, I will look back and see myself as being very smart to have done that.
You will have no choice.
No choice if our business is being carried on to our children.
Yeah.
And it would be irresponsible of me to not to struggle to get out the word to the impacts of on us, to the community, so they can see that maybe this is really the best of intentions and absolutely the worst of ideas.
Well, you do two things. You are a manufacturer here in Santa Cruz, which is, boy, last of the Mohicans, aren't you?
It's not exactly an expanding industrial sector.
But you're also a retailer. You have a store on Pacific Garden Mall where you sell cookies.
Right.
Well, you can't really move your retail store away, can you?
Nor would I. No, I love downtown Santa Cruz. Yeah. It's a fabulous place to do business.
Yeah, I don't think we're going to become bookshop just outside of the city, Santa Cruz.
Well, let's go to the phone and see what the community has to say. Folks, the phone numbers today are 479-1080, 477-1340. This is the Saturday special on AM 1080 KSCO. Michael Olson sitting in for Michael Zwirling. Today we're talking about the proposal to raise the minimum wage here in Santa Cruz from $6.75 an hour to $9.25 an hour. That's a 37% increase, plus a mandatory cost of living increase from here to eternity. as somebody once wrote on the cover of a book. So let's go to the phones, 479-1347-71340. Let's go to West Sidell. West Sidell, welcome to the Saturday special.
Good morning, gentlemen. So far I'm in complete agreement with everything that Neil and Larry and your previous guest have said regarding this proposal. Michael, I have a suggestion. If you want to get these proponents on the air, you've got to tell them you're going to broadcast them on Air America.
Okay.
That's going to help a lot. Now, this problem of indexing, I think we can all remember back not so many years ago when inflation was running at 10% or more a year. That would be a job killer, just tremendous negative effect. And I don't agree with that aspect of it at all. My wife manages a retail business downtown. Unfortunately, the owner has decided to close it up and move to Oregon. But they never hire anybody at minimum. They start everybody at, I think it's 8.25, and raises are significant if the performance justifies them. I have a prediction here, and I'm afraid it's not going to be pleasant. Larry already seems to have accepted the fact that this thing is going to make the ballot. And I think in large part that is because signature gathering at the university will ensure that. And that's the flip side of that is the vote from the university will ensure its passage. As in the case of taxes that are imposed on the community, at the university, students, and the university itself doesn't have to pay. This is similar because the students will look at this as a benefit to their own job status, and they don't have to pay for it. So I predict it's going to make the ballot, and it's going to pass, and the ramifications are not going to be good. Can one of you gentlemen tell me what the proposed increase in the state minimum wage is?
And we're all scratching our heads.
Well, no, the governor has proposed raising the minimum wage to $7.75 an hour. That's a dollar increase in 2 50-cent increases.
Uh-huh, but without any indexing.
No indexing. And, in fact, to my knowledge, nowhere we're in this country where the minimum wage has been raised, with the single exception, I believe, of San Francisco, has some kind of indefinite inflator been attached to that. It's always been increased in relatively modest increments and for short timelines so that the impacts can be absorbed and you don't connect yourself to an unlimited future of unknowns.
And, Al, you know, I wouldn't give up on the student vote. It may be that they see this as helping their jobs, but it also is going to mean significant higher prices that they're going to pay. They don't have the mobility that most people have. They have a limited amount of ways to get around town, and they're going to be paying significant price hikes in restaurants and stores in the downtown area, and I think that is a factor that that we'll hope to make clear to them.
Well, if they can be educated on that point, Neil, then there is a fighting chance, although with the past history of voting up there, when you see 75 to 90% of the students voting the same way on just about anything, it's dire, my friend, it's dire. Anyhow, that's about all I had. My background is in economics, and I've been looking at this thing as closely as I could, although, as you say, there hasn't been a whole lot of public discussion, and I hope that changes.
Well, so, let me ask you this, Al.
Yes.
Why hasn't there been any dialogue here?
I mean, because they don't have to. They know they can get this on the ballot, and they're pretty sure they're going to pass it. So it's kind of like the gun to the head. They don't have to do anything to satisfy the needs of the community to have a participation in a discussion on this. They just don't have to, and so they won't.
So the only way to fight this, perhaps, is to do the survey and to get the information that the community needs to make the decision.
Well, yeah. We're going to speak to the voters. I mean, you know, part of having an election is to really sit down and have a dialogue and educate the voters. And, you know, we feel like the first thing we have to do is get the facts. But then we're going to try to engage voters and let them know what the consequences are so they can make an educated decision. That's what
Absolutely. Elections, that's
the best thing that elections are about, and we hope that's what we're going to facilitate.
Well, it's a massive education project that you've got in front of you there, Neil, and I wish you all the best in making your points clear, and I wish you all the best in defeating this proposal.
Thank you very much, Al. That frees up a line at 479-1080 and 877-1340 is still open. Oh, boy, guess who just popped in the studio? Cindy Geis from Restaurante Avante, which is my wife Marlene's favorite place. She always comes back from her university lunches with a big smile on her face. So,
great.
Glad to have you here, Cindy. Welcome to the Saturday special.
Thank you.
You know, in today's paper, there was an interesting article about how it takes 3 years to get a two-year degree at Cabrillo College. And the paper, the writer kind of lays that to the fact that it's impossible to make a living in this town. It takes a third longer, I guess, or half longer to do a two-year job because of that. Your comments? Well, what are we going to do about this?
Santa Cruz is an expensive place. I'm not sure that this kind of action is really going to help. In fact, I'm pretty sure it's not. But there are things about the housing costs here. And Santa Cruz always ranked as one of the highest places in the country to live. It's a little bit unfair because they contrast the average income versus the cost of housing. And with a lot of students in town, obviously they bring down that average income quite a bit. So it's not really a fair comparison, but it's an expensive place to live. $925 doesn't touch what a living wage would be.
Somewhere around $175 an hour, maybe, huh?
But there's a lot of problems that have to be solved. Unfortunately, this proposal, with good intentions, is not going to solve those. It's going to compound the problems.
Okay, we're going to go to the phones. We have lines open at 477-1340. And before we do go to the lines, we have a accident on northbound 17 at Laurel Curve. There's a rollover, and it's backing up traffic big time, which is bad news for me because I have to go pick up my wife at San Francisco. So that's the way of it. Let's go to Billy. Billy, welcome to the Saturday special.
Oh, thank you very much. My name is Billy Packard. I've had the pleasure of meeting Larry recently. And,
hi, Billy.
Hi, Larry. I just want to toss in my two cents because I have been self-employed for a lot of my life, and now I am both self-employed and employed in a retail business myself outside of the city. And with all respect to the cost of living in Santa Cruz being what it is, one thing that I've learned on my own as well as working for the company that I do is that people that are well paid do their job well and that feel more motivation. And so from that standpoint, I do believe in this, you know, minimum wage to a certain point. But when a small, tiny minority of what really amount to, you know, lunatics, or maybe that's not kind, but certainly a fringe,
well, they're not fringe. They're part of the Santa Cruz City Council.
Well,
the City Council hasn't taken a position yet.
Oh, okay, so the members of the
some city. Members have members. Have supported this. Other members have been silent at this point.
Okay,
right. So I overspoke. Let's just say that the heavily socialist leaning individuals that are, you know, part of the council and so forth. I mean, I don't believe there's any way that you can force something like this on a business community and have it succeed. But my question really is, aside from the university, and when I was reading in the paper the number of signatures they need to get it on the ballot, I mean, they could probably pick that up at the university in a week without even touching the pavement in town. But is there enough people in town that would actually vote for something? I mean, do we have that many registered voters, people that are workers and actually have a mind about what's really going on in business and all that, you know?
Larry brought up a interesting reply to that question. So let's go to Larry Pearson from Pacific Cookie Company.
I'll take my answer off the line,
okay? Well, thank you so much.
I'm driving and want to keep both hands on the wheel. Thank
Please
you, guys.
Do, and stay off Highway 17 northbound right now.
I'm heading over to San Juan Bautista where you can come and hear me play music at Hardina's to San Juan restaurant every Saturday and Sunday from 12 to 3, man. Mandolin and guitar.
Okay, bud. You got a free plug over there from KSU.
Nice work, Bill.
But nice
my
job.
My pleasure.
Bye. Well, we were talking off the air earlier about what we're engaged in, obviously, as Al put it very well, an educational effort. And I believe that when people get the information they need to determine how to vote, that they'll be thoughtful enough to consider not just the fact that this is an attractive proposal on its surface, but maybe it's something that has more harmful effect than beneficial effects. And we're confident that those people will make the right choice in Santa Cruz. Our job is to give them the information they need to make what we believe to be the right informed choice. So it is with that confidence that we're going ahead, and we've commissioned this study, which is not cheap. We've spent, I think it's $20,000 for the study. Wish I didn't have to spend money to support it, but I'm frankly happy that I did. It's part of an effort that will go on now through through the election to engage these issues that arise from this proposal, engage those with the community, have a conversation that people will be able to make up their minds about how they feel.
Let me permit you to jump in here, because you held up your fingers in a parallel way, and you said there's a slice of people that will make a difference.
Well, I don't have to convince Cindy or Neil. I probably don't have to convince a lot of your callers. I don't have to convince a lot of my business friends. I don't have to convince anyone in LOBA or in the Chamber of Commerce or in the nonprofit world, in which I serve on a few boards.
You know, we're like Custer at the Greasy Grass.
Well, no, I tell you, and there's no way that I'm going to convince Nora to change her mind or those members of council who have come out already and supported this. There are people that will vote this way as a piece of labor advocacy, and they'll believe that their vote is, if you will, a moral vote, and damn the consequences. But I think there's a large group of people in the middle who do believe that people at the lowest end of the wage scale should earn more money, that that's fair, but that also feel that there is or must be a better way of going about it, one that really gives you the results you're looking for rather than creates very, very harmful results.
Okay, we're going to go to Billy right now in Capitola. Billy, welcome to the Saturday special.
Hello, gentlemen.
And lady.
And lady.
Yes.
In fact, let me just say that I, too, am a big fan of that restaurant, excellent Italian food.
Thank you.
And let me start there maybe as a way to look at the minimum wage. I've always been offended. I get offended easily. by the fact that restaurateurs have the greatest scam going. They don't have to pay their wait staff proper wage. They've managed to push that on to the diners. I've always thought that was sort of questionable. Here's the, you know,
well,
the two
ultimately,
views.
Billy, it always comes to the diner, doesn't it?
How's that?
Well, who else is going to pay?
Well,
it's
you know,
always
the employer
gonna be on the
pays
diner.
And charges a price for his product.
If Cindy paid her wait people $50 an hour to wait on us, who would pay that?
Well, we pay it in the form of a check at the end, as we do with every product. We pay whatever they ask us, rather than having, well, here's what we want, and then plus give a little extra to the guy at the counter because we didn't pay him enough. Let me follow this through with what I think is going on.
Go ahead.
So first of all, Santa Cruz, best place to live in the world, great weather, got the ocean. Now, I don't think that just because you want to, you get to live close to the ocean. I understand real estate being more expensive close to the ocean than it is away from the ocean. Having said that, you know, I don't want to live in a community made up of two kinds of people, rich, thieving owners and impoverished workers. Doesn't sound to me like a great community that's going to be getting along great. What I would rather see is well-paid workers, even if maybe there has to be one or two less, the ones who are working hard. You know, remember the days when we had welfare and people were living off of welfare and everything was, well, if they would only work, that would be great. Well, now they're holding two and three jobs and still can't have a decent life. I'm offended by that. And in the final analysis, here's what I want to say. I've looked at the kind of people in the past who have been against the minimum wage, and I've listened to them say what it was going to do to America and how we were going to fall apart and recessions and depressions. Never happened. They were always liars. And what I really learned about people who like the minimum wage is they're wannabe slaveholders, because without a minimum wage, there are some people who would pay nothing if they could. Aren't there?
Well, let's have our guest.
As a rich thieving owner, I just want to let you know I don't pay minimum wage. You know, in the past, the only time I've paid minimum wage is a couple weekends in December. We get some junior high school students in to do gift wrapping for us, and we don't even do that anymore. So I'm not paying minimum wage. And I'm paying $166,000 a year in non-mandatory benefits for my employees. I'm not required by any law to do that, to provide health care,
exactly,
dental care, all this stuff.
That's
so,
a good point.
I'm not trying to pay the smallest amount.
Why is that? Why aren't you trying to pay the minimum wage?
Why am I not?
Yes.
Because I'm trying to run a good business.
Because you're not a bad guy, right? Right?
Yeah, there's a lot of us in Santa Cruz like that.
That's right. But the ones who do want to pay minimum wage, let's be clear about who they are. They are bad guys who ultimately, like I'm going to say it again because I think it makes the point, if you want to pay the minimum wage, you'll want to be a slaveholder.
Neil brought up the fact that he was hiring junior high school kids paying a minimum wage to wrap packages. When I was growing up, I had a lot of those jobs, and for them I was most grateful because they taught me that that's not where I wanted to be in life, and each time I had a job like that, it encouraged me to move along for greener pastures. So was Neil an evil slave owner type guy for hiring junior high school kids and paying them minimum wage to wrap packages?
Absolutely not. The fact is that when you pay a child some money for their very first couple of jobs, paying the minimum wage really does make sense. As you point out, you realize you'd like to do better, and you could. However, some people, let's be honest for a second, do get stuck in minimum wage jobs, do have families they're trying to support. I don't want them on welfare. I don't want them trying to figure out how to pay their medicine.
Would you like to give us your address?
Excuse me?
Would you like to give us your address? We'll send them over to you. You can take care of them.
My address is at KSCO. Please send your... by the way, while I'm on there, I realize that I upset right-wingers and that if you're a right-winger, you don't like to hear from Billy Sunshine.
Okay, let me ask you this then. Why, representing the progressive side of this, why is there nobody from the labor people who are initiating this petition? Why are they not participating in the dialogue like you are, Billy?
Well, I have a relationship with KSCO that has been very interesting and rocky at times, but we've been very tight and worked together. One of the problems might be KSCO itself, is that some of the, shall we say, the lefties.
Well, no, it's not just KSCO, Billy. It's in the newspaper. People have not been able to get them as well.
Well, I would like to know about that. By the way, let me agree with one part of what you're trying to get done, and that is that the automatic raising of that minimum wage as we go, I don't see that as necessary. I would like for us to live in the kind of a community where, when it makes sense to raise that minimum wage, the people running the county have to come to us and ask us to do it again, and then we do it because we're good folks who don't want our neighbors starving and attacking us and robbing us in our sleep.
Okay, Billy Sunshine, you've had your moment in the sunshine. We thank you for calling in the Saturday special.
Thanks, gentlemen.
All right. Fun to have you aboard. Folks, this is the Saturday special. Michael Olson sitting in for Michael Zwirling today. Today we're talking about the proposal to raise the minimum wage here in Santa Cruz from $6.75 an hour to $9.25 an hour, which is an increase, I believe, of 37%, plus a mandatory cost of living increase every year after that until eternity expires, whenever that happens to be. And as you might imagine, this poses some interesting situations for local business people. And so today we're asking, do you think raising the minimum wage, a mandatory 37% plus cost of living increase, what do you think will happen to our business community should we go ahead and make that decision? Our phone numbers today are 477-1340 and 479-1080. We are going to take a quick break for the news, and when we come back, we're going to be talking with our guests today. We have Neil Coonerty, we have Larry Pearson and Cindy Geis, longtime Santa Cruz business people. And hey, I think Michael Zwirling is going to be checking in from way down there in Mexico. So who knows? Sounds like a lot of fun. Do stay tuned.
Fox News Radio, I'm Lisa Carton. Nuclear worries, the International Atomic Energy Agency sending its concerns over Iran to the U.N. Security Council.
We're seriously...
It's currently 56 degrees here at the broadcast station in Santa Cruz, now 6 minutes past 11 a.m., and time for hour number two of the Saturday special with your host, Michael Olson.
Oh, hello, darling. I hate to hang up on you, but... I'm sorry, baby, but I have to go. It's time for that wonderful record show. I'd love to visit, but you'll have to call back. KSCO has the inside track. Sorry, baby, but I really gotta go to KSCO Radio. Bye.
Welcome back. It's 7 minutes past the hour here in the Saturday Special Zone. Michael Olson, your host for this hour. I'm sitting in for Michael Zwirling, who's way far away in Mexico, but not really. He's right, actually right here, aren't you, Michael?
I sure am. How you doing, Michael?
Very good. Hey, today we're talking...
Hey, good. And welcome to Neil and Larry and that
and
wonderful,
Cindy.
Nice lady in the studio. How many are there?
There's three of us here. Well, three besides me.
Oh, good.
But I don't count.
Listen, technology is absolutely fantastic. I've listened to the entire program live through the internet and through a direct connection through a computer. I'm in Cabo San Lucas, docked on a cruise ship. Now, I don't want to sound insensitive, gang, but, you know, I heard your announcement at the beginning, you know, the promo about it being very expensive to live in Santa Cruz. Please don't take this the wrong way, everybody, but, you know, it's so expensive to live in Santa Cruz. Why don't we all just say screw it and move, just live on a ship, because it's much less expensive to just live on a cruise ship than to be in Santa Cruz and just pay, you know, and live on minimum wage. I'm telling you. I mean, it's just...
Good idea.
I don't know what they've done, but it's just amazing. So, seriously, in fact, I've been thinking a lot about having a monthly KSCO cruise, you know, that would be hosted by some different KSCO person, you know, each month. I don't know. Well, we can...
Michael, so this is Neil Coonerty. I think
Michael, can you hear us?
I think you're sounding a little too much like Marie Antoinette at the moment.
Let them eat cake.
There's a cake moment coming.
Come on, you guys. Listen, about the minimum waging, I think it was West Side Al who called.
You're sounding a little bit like that, Max Headroom, Michael.
Hmm. Yeah, was it West Side Al who called earlier to say that he thinks that it's going to pass?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I disagree with that. I do not think it's going to pass, even though in Santa Cruz, let me give you my analysis. Rent control was something that people, you know, many, many people think should have passed, and it was tried not once but three times in the 80s, and I think early 90s, if I'm not mistaken, and each time it went down to progressively greater defeat. And so I don't know. I mean, I'm going to be a whole lot more positive than West Side Al is, and say that if it does get on the ballot, I don't think it's going to pass. I don't think it's going to get close.
Well, do you think that position is being negative if you're a worker working for minimum wage?
I don't think, do I think that position is negative? Is mm-hmm. that what you asked?
I mean, you, speaking as a business owner, you would like to see the proposition fail, but what if you were speaking as a minimum wage earner? What would you think?
Yeah, everything sort of depends on what side of the fence you're on, mm-hmm. although I do believe that, you know, a lot of these things that are proposed by the government, these radical things, to help a group of people who definitely need help, I mean, there's no question about it,
oftentimes end up hurting the people who it's designed to more than anybody else. And I think that's what you guys are saying. Am I
good,
right?
Good intentions, bad idea? Something like that? Yeah.
Well, why is it a bad idea? I mean, aren't you saying that in the long run it's going to make it so that businesses close down so that there won't be any kind of...
Well, I think you're right.
There won't be nearly the number of employment positions that are available now.
Let's ask Larry Pearson. Larry, you were quoted as saying good intentions, bad idea. What do you mean by that?
Well, it's the very few people in Santa Cruz that would argue that people at the lowest end of the wage scale should earn more.
Good intentions. We raise it up.
And I think I'm virtually certain that if we were here to discuss the governor's proposal to raise the minimum wage to $7.75 an hour over 2 years in 50-cent increments, that none of us would have gotten out of our homes and come down here to talk about it. But this particular proposal is just wrong and so harmful in so many respects that it's really the worst of intentions, and I mean the best of intentions, but the very worst of ideas.
There you go. Michael?
Yeah, well, I wouldn't disagree with any of that. So did I hear, certainly Larry said that he supports the governor's proposal. What about Neil?
Well, I support it. You know, the Democrats are taking a look at it. They're going to want to have an effect on that, but I've got no problems with it as far as it goes. And I think that they'll work something out, and, you know, California will have an increased minimum wage, which it should. But it's uniform, it's across, you know, it'll be, you know, throughout all the communities. We'll all be, you know, playing by the same level playing field, and that's really important when you're in business.
Should our playing field be the same as everybody else's when we are a much more expensive community in which to live?
Well, the part of the proposition here is a lot of people are talking about the people making minimum wage, and when you eliminate teenagers that are having part-time jobs, I don't think that there's many people in the city of Santa Cruz that now earn minimum wage. I think that a vast majority of people are well over minimum wage. They may not be at $9.25, mm-hmm. but they're over minimum wage. And so, you know, the argument isn't that there's a great deal of people making that level of wage. Santa Cruz is expensive, but I think there's a lot of other things that have to be done in order to bring that down. And we're part of a regional economy that has caused a number of prices here to go up significantly.
Let me make a comment, because the proponents of this measure maintain that there are 22,000 people in the county of Santa Cruz that are being paid minimum wage. I've got to tell you, as an employer, and also as an employer for many years that reported to the Bureau of Labor Statistics on my payroll, as that's where they come up with their index increases, there is no organization, no governmental organization, that requires an employer to report how much he pays each individual in his business. Only the total they've been paid by quarter for every quarter in a year. And that's reflected, obviously, at the end of the year on your W-2. It tells you how much you made for the year. It does not tell you how much you made per hour. There's nobody that knows.
So they're just making it up?
Sorry?
They're just making it up?
Yes.
Whoever said that.
Yes, because that can only be a supposition. There's no data that they've gotten from any governmental agency that could lead them to that conclusion or any conclusion, because it's an unknown.
Yeah, I hear you. And there are, you know, I want to give an instance of people that do make minimum wage. At the city council presentation, the director of Hope Services came in, and they hire people to sleep overnight at homes of people who are severely disabled. It's a safety consideration. It's to help them in case something happens, and they're unable to be mobile. And so these people actually go there and sleep, and they're paid minimum wage to sleep. And they were talking about a huge impact on them, being able to have those people in the homes of those disabled people.
Can we talk about the impacts of this proposal from the perspective? You folks represent a pretty good cross-section of what Santa Cruz is. Let's throw it to you, Cindy Geis. Perhaps you'd start us, proprietor of Restaurant Avante. How would an increase of 37% plus mandatory cost of living increases have an impact on your business? What would happen?
Well, I think in my business, in my particular restaurant, within the larger picture of restaurants in Santa Cruz, we think of ourselves as a casual restaurant, but we definitely strive to offer quality, fine-level dining service level. That would drastically change. It would.
Why?
Because my business plan would not allow for me to increase wages to that level.
You would have to increase the wait people generally make minimum wages, correct? And then make a lot of tips, a lot on tips.
Well, basically, but they actually make higher than the minimum wage.
Okay.
I mean, most.
Do any of you three pay minimum wage?
No.
I have three employees in my business that are at minimum wage. I have 35 total employees. There, one is a high school student. There are two UCSC students. So that's a starting wage. They come
entry,
off of that.
Entry-level
yes.
people. Right.
Right.
And, you know, it's, I think for Cindy's business, you know, the tips are part of the compensation. The federal government recognizes it as income. The state government recognizes it as income. Not even recognizes. They insist that they are income. And these people have to pay taxes on those. And suddenly we have this proposal that doesn't recognize that as income. And it means that, you know, that they have to bring, if they're paying, you know, the minimum wage now, they have to bring that up $2.50 an hour. That's going to hit the cost of going to that restaurant. It's going to hit the quality of the goods. It's going to hit all those sorts of things. And it's going to make it uncompetitive with people, restaurants that are outside the city. There's no reason that if people are paying more inside, if people are being paid more inside the city, that they're not going to maximize their dollar by going then and buying the hammer out in at Home Depot and Capitola, or going to a restaurant outside the city so that they can maximize that dollar that they have. It doesn't mean that a rising tide will float all boats and suddenly Santa Cruz will have more economic activity. That economic activity will probably also migrate outside the city because there will be lower prices.
Cindy, you offer this wonderful food in Santa Cruz, and you charge X for it. But, gosh, there's somebody right across 41st Avenue that opens a store and says, I can provide the same kind of food and the same kind of atmosphere, and I can charge 10, 20% less because I don't live in Santa Cruz.
Right, because they don't operate their business in the city of Santa Cruz. Right, it will make for a very unfair business operation setup. You wouldn't want to do business in the city. I mean, given that disparity that we as business owners would be faced with.
Larry, you're a manufacturer.
Cindy, where is Robert?
Yeah, go ahead, Mike.
Located.
Where is Restaurant Devonte?
Oh, Mission Street, west side of Santa Cruz.
Okay.
Right across the street from the pottery store.
Right. Santa Cruz Pottery.
Okay. Yeah, I've seen it. Gosh, sorry, I remember.
Try it, Larry. You manufacture cookies here. What about manufacturing in Santa Cruz?
Well,
manufacturing anything. I mean,
the impacts here on us, and the impact on us, one that needs to be talked about is we're not talking about taking people who are making $6.75 an hour and then raising them to $9.25 an hour. That's not the single impact in a business. Everybody making less than $9.25 an hour would have to go to $9.25 an hour. And that costs X amount of dollars. For us, it would be, we estimate, something in the neighborhood of $40,000 to comply in the first year and, of course, subsequently. But
until
the effect,
eternity.
Yeah, until eternity. But we have, there are currently, of the 35 people we employ, 12 people making below $9.25 an hour. So those are the most directly affected. But it affects almost everyone in our organization.
How?
Well, a person that's been with me for 3 or 4 years and is making $9.50 or $10 an hour, I can't keep them at that rate once this passes. Then I haven't rewarded their longevity or their increased ability to do their job, their efficiencies. So they would need to be increased. So we figure all the way up through our wage salary structure, everyone would get an increase, less dramatic than $250 an hour at the high end of that scale. And then also in some of our salaried positions, we would have also that similar kind of impact that you have to pay for person's skill and time in service and so on.
So somebody that's working for you for a long time all of a sudden is making minimum wage, and they say, well, wait a minute, I've been working for you for a long time,
I
deserve more than minimum wage.
So we figure another 50% of that or another $20,000 is the real compression effect in my payroll. So I have a $60,000 effect. Well, that $60,000 is indexed, so next year I've got that effect as well. So it's that problem which causes, I have four ways to deal with that problem. One is I can cut jobs, and to a certain extent that's possible. You make the people working for you now work harder. Let me just say this as a baseline. This will not put me out of business. I can't imagine anything you could do to my business to put me out of business, because, you know, all of us sitting here know how to survive through tough times. And we'll find a way to do it. But I have four tools at my disposal. One is I can lay people off. The second is that I can review our benefits package and reduce or eliminate it, which after 25 years of doing it, it's the last thing I want to do. Third thing I have is to raise prices. And I'm in different markets. Let me tell you this. If I could raise prices, I would. I mean, that's not, you know, we don't sit here laying price increases laying around that we could effectively implement. So that's tough, but that's another tool. And then the fourth tool would be, when I'm able, I move as much of my manufacturing operation just outside the city limits. And then, because I can look back 10, 20 years from now, having done that.
And pat yourself on the back.
Yeah, pat myself on the back for having done it.
Neil, you have a retail store, bookshop, Santa Cruz. You don't pay minimum wage, so how could this possibly affect you?
Well, we have the same situation where it'll echo its way throughout the entire wage scale. But to my mind, one of the things that I dislike the most about this whole proposal is that it places no value on benefits for employees. It doesn't speak to that. And it takes all those things like health care, dental care, 401ks, paid time off, and it says we're going to throw those in the trash, and now we're only going to vote, and it's going to be a yes or no on the hourly wage. And, you know, to me, the people that I employ, especially the people that have been there a long time, health benefits are a major concern, and we've always had a quality level health benefit. And if I have paid out $166,000 in non-mandated benefits last year, and this is going to hit me for about $100,000 in the first year and then increase from that point on, it means that I've got to figure out where to do it. And I'm in a business where I can't raise the prices. They're printed on the magazines. They're printed on the books.
And you have competitors, lots of them,
and
right down the street.
And I have lots of competitors. And that's one of the other effects of this whole proposal, is that it helps chains win over locally owned businesses, because, you know, the Borders down the street, for their 30 employees or whatever they have, they can absorb these kind of increases across an employee base of 10,000 people. It affects every one of the people that's employed with me. So it gives chains that are coming in an edge, and they're able to absorb those. And it's at the detriment of locally owned independent businesses. And, you know, that's one of these unintended consequences, that if they'd sat down and talked and figured out something that could work for everything, we could count benefits, we could count tips, we could count teenagers, we could count nonprofits, we could deal with all these things and maybe come up with something better. But they chose not to do that, and they're out there gathering signatures on a set of language that's not going to change. It's going to be in the ballot.
So mandatory. Michael, what do you think about going to the phone lines? Are you there, MZ? Hello, hello.
How you doing? I'm sorry, what was the question?
Should we go to the phone lines?
Yeah, I'll absolutely go to the phone. I'm trying to figure out if I could get on the phone lines here. But
okay. We're going to go to Jan in San Lorenzo Valley. And, John, I know you were waiting for like 25 minutes. I'm really sorry. I guess got carried away with all of these fine folks. So please call back, and we'll put you at the top of the line. In the interim, Jan from the San Lorenzo Valley.
Hi, yes, good morning.
Welcome.
I don't think this is really about the minimum wage. This is about clearing out more housing and offices for the university. They're using this as a tool for getting more businesses to move. When businesses move, the people who work in those businesses move also. And more housing opens up, more buildings open up. I think one thing we need to do in this town, is in Santa Cruz, is we need to annex the university out of the city of Santa Cruz so that the residents can maintain control.
Okay. Should we ask our guests what they think of that notion? Neil?
Over the years, I've had a lot of people that wanted to kick the university out of the community, but, you know, it's a great asset to our community. There's problems that, you know, we're dealing with this growth initiative the university has, and sometimes they take buildings that provide taxes to the city and take them off the tax roll, and they can, because they're a state organization, they can do what they want, but I would hate to see them leave. There's so many benefits that come out of having
where they're not willing to build their own housing, so there's enough housing for their students, so they're taking over the town. They're like a big giant monster gobbling up Santa Cruz.
Well,
and unless we park cruise ships outside the coast of Santa Cruz, like MZ suggests, they're going to take over all of Santa Cruz.
Well, let me ask you this, Jan. Do you think that we should be raising the mandatory minimum wage, 37% plus mandatory cost of living every year?
No, I don't. It's a method of madness.
Then how
but
are people supposed
so
to live
mad
here?
That it's got to be that they're just using this as a tool to clear out more housing and businesses. That's what all of this stuff is going on.
Okay, let's see if Cindy or Larry have a comment about the university. Cindy?
Well, I definitely agree with Neil. I mean, I see problems from the university, but I also see them as an asset. I think education in our country is vitally important. I mean, I really can't think of, you know, anything I'd rather have than an educational facility in the city.
Besides that, Cindy, my wife takes all of her students to lunch at your place.
Right.
So.
And the university is not sponsoring this. You know, they're not involved in sort of drawing this up. This is done by a number of political activists in town that Nora Hockman's been associated with a number of unions in this community. And, you know, they're good people. It's just they've got a poorly drawn up proposal here. And
well, I think they have an agenda, and I know most of you think know which one I'm talking about. And with that, I think I'll get off the air and let you people go on.
Well, thanks for giving us a hoot today, Jan.
You're welcome.
Really appreciate it. Let's go quickly to Carmen in Santa Cruz. Carmen,
welcome
to the Saturday special.
Hello.
You're on. Fire away, girl.
Okay. I don't know if your listeners or listeners anywhere, American people understand who provides the most jobs in this country. It's not Ford. It's not a Chrysler. It isn't any of these big companies. It's
Let me guess. It's Cindy and Larry and Neil. Right?
What are you talking about?
I'm talking about our guests. It's small business people that provide the jobs in America.
That's what I'm saying. All over the country. It's not just Santa Cruz. Forget, you know, Santa Cruz. I'd like to sometime. But anyway, no, they provide all the jobs. People misunderstand that. The average American person doesn't understand that the most jobs are created by small businesses. The more strain you put on small business, you're going to get people to leave. We know that. I mean, that's just normal. They're not going to be able to handle this. Small business can't even give their people health coverage, let alone give more per hour. It's not. It solves one problem, and it doesn't solve the other.
Well,
and I'm thinking about just putting this about unions, because I've got this whole outsourcing thing all figured out. I've had it figured out for years. Hmm. What they need to, they can't do anything about it. Unions are not, people aren't joining unions. I think it's 12% now that are union members. What we've got to do, we've got to get profit sharing in this country. We're not going to be able to fight these people going overseas. We can do it by just profit sharing. You get your people that work for you, be part of your business. They'll understand the employer's problem, and the employer's problem will understand the worker's problem. We don't need unions. If we could just get that system going, we could forget about worrying about off, you know, setting everything overseas. It'll stay right here.
Carmen, you're a darling. Thanks for calling.
Anyway, thanks.
All right. Great. Folks, this is the Saturday Special. Michael Olson. I am sitting in on the Saturday Special here on AM 1080 KSCO for Michael Zwirling, who's evidently down in Mexico having a ball. And also in the studio today, we're talking about the mandatory effort or the mandatory raising of the minimum wage, the efforts to raise it from approximately 37%, including a mandatory cost of living for from now until forever. Do you think raising the mandatory minimum wage from $6.75 to $9.25 an hour will benefit the business community and the workers that live from that community? Or do you think it will do us harm? The phone numbers today are 479-1080, 477-1340, Neil Coonerty, Bookshop Santa Cruz, Larry Pearson, Pacific Cookie, Cindy Geis, Restaurante Avante. Do stay tuned. We will be right back.
Hi, I'm Dr. Guy Peabody. If fear is preventing you from seeing the dentist, listen to how we've helped others with sedation dentistry.
I'm Pat. Well, we had a consultation. He went over all my x-rays. Frankly, I was skeptical that he could get me numb or the treatments would be painless. And he prescribed a course of treatment and went into the office. And 5 hours later, I was out smiling and felt absolutely nothing. I would highly recommend Dr. Peabody to anybody that has any apprehension about a dentist. He's the man, and I'm a true believer. And the staff is fantastic.
We've helped hundreds of people wake up to a beautiful smile. Let us help you, too.
Call Dr. Guy Peabody at 457-0343. That's 831-457-0343. Find Dr. Peabody's sedation dentistry on the web at drpeabody.com or in the Yellow Pages. You, too, can wake up to a beautiful smile.
Business owners, frustrated about work comp insurance and don't know where to go? Getting low rates, easy payments, and claims help you deserve? Need us to go to bat for you? With WorkComp.com, it's true. We're different, and we're changing work comp insurance. Check into transferring over your existing policy now, or let our brokers quote your renewal. Either way, you win. Don't accept the same old thing. Isn't it time for a change? To WorkComp.com, the secret is out. WorkComp.com is our name. WorkComp is our game. Our name says it all. Welcome to our domain. WorkComp.com, the Internet's number one source for workers' compensation insurance. Log on now or call toll-free 888-EZ-WORKCOMP. That's 888, the letters E-Z or 3-9. WorkComp. See website for full disclosures. WorkComp.com.
Thank you for calling Jungle Plant. Having trouble finding something for that plant lover on your list? Jungle Plant gift certificates are the answer. Thank you for calling Jungle Plant. Come in and see our beautiful jungle, make friends with the animals, and buy something. Thank you for calling Jungle Plant. Let us help you with your holiday decorating. We're located at 2230 Soquel Avenue, open Saturday through Monday, 12 to 5, or by appointment. 462-5806. Thank you for calling Jungle Plant.
Hello, this is Tom Quinn, the host of Perspectives Radio Show. Every Saturday at noon, we give you cutting-edge news about current events. We interview well-known experts on a variety of issues, so listen in this Saturday from noon to 1 to Perspectives. Thank you.
Now time to go back to the Saturday Special with your host, Michael Olson.
Hey, welcome back. This is the Saturday Special. Michael Olson here, sitting in for Michael Zwirling, who is way in sunny Mexico, having a good time, sitting on a cruise liner someplace. And let's see, we have today, we're talking about the effort to increase the mandatory minimum wage from $6.75 an hour to $9.25. That's an increase, folks, of 37%. Imagine what would happen in your business if your business had expenses of 37% go up in 1 year, plus mandatory increases from here until eternity. Would your business be able to survive? That's what we're trying to figure out here today, is can our local businesses survive these good intentions? We have with us Neil Coonerty from Bookshop Santa Cruz, Larry Pearson from Pacific Cookie, Cindy Geis from Restaurante Avante, and holy smokes, we also have Michael, who owns Java Junks, and he's calling in. Let's see what Michael's got to say. Michael, welcome to the Saturday special.
How's it going?
Very good.
I just came in late to this conversation. I just turned in the channel a couple seconds ago, but I'm
you
not late to
you snoozed and you lose then, didn't you?
Well, yeah, kind of. But, you know, I currently pay people over minimum wage. I have most of my staff doesn't really like to work more than 20 hours a week. They like to about work that many hours a week. And if they raise the minimum wage, both my leases are up soon. I mean, why would somebody stay and continue to operate their business within the city of Santa Cruz when you can go across the way and not, and have a lower wage? It's just...
Well, why, Cindy?
Yeah, I'm maybe you have a really good view. I don't know.
I mean, manufacturing. I mean, if you manufacture something like Pacific Cookie Company and you're here in Santa Cruz, you go I don't know if you own your location or if you own your manufacturing facility, why would you go to Watsonville?
Yeah,
right.
We rent, yeah.
I mean, you're going to move to Watsonville. My roasting company. I have a roasting company. It's in a warehouse. I can, you know, when that lease is up, I mean, if I have to pay minimum wage to have a business in the city, and it's $9.25 an hour, and I can go out of the city. City's already what lost 10%. We're on a 10% decline in sales tax revenue.
Roughly.
So that just makes it get more and harder and harder. Needless to say, my drink prices will have to go up by about 10% to cover it.
Okay, so you keep raising your drink prices, and you keep raising your drink prices. But hey, I can go up here to 41st Avenue, and not have to pay those high drink.
And not have to pay that. You know how many people of our tourists are, you know, a lot of our economy is based on tourism, are going to understand that it's higher on this side of the street than that side of the street? Not too many of them. They're not going to know we have this internal battle with $9.25 an hour wages here, and the other side of the street is at $7.75 when they finally raise it up for the state.
Well, tourists will probably pay the price, but residents might not, right?
No, they won't.
Richard, Michael, thank you for the call. Appreciate
it.
Yeah,
thanks.
Let's go to Mike in Santa Cruz. Mike, let's see, I got that one. Mike, welcome to the Saturday special.
Your host,
Michael Olson, and we've got Neil Coonerty, Larry Pearson, and Cindy Geis.
Yeah, guys, thanks for the show today. It's very informative. I'd come down on the side that this is going to hurt the people that these so-called proponents, the city leaders, are trying most to help. It's just going to raise the cost of living quite a bit. I don't know what that would translate to. Maybe an overall, after a year or two of it, 25%, 30% overall cost of living in Santa Cruz by the time all that filters down. And it's going to hurt the people at the bottom the most. And I have one small objection to the way you're going about this program, though.
Oh, please do.
And that is that you're being too nice to these people who are trying to push this down our throats. When you talk about them maybe having good intentions or good hearts or good, you know, but bad ideas, you're just giving them way too much credit. These are not nice people. They have shown that very clearly by
their silence,
the way they won't talk with you about it.
Well, they don't have to talk with us about it. The contention is that they think they've got it made and they don't need to talk.
Yeah. If they were nice, though, they would talk. These are not nice people, and they're not dumb either. I think they're very educated. They know how to get things done, and they are going to do this if they can at all get it done, and they are going to destroy Santa Cruz. One more piece will drift away from us.
You talked about those of us who have the hardest time. Larry Pearson, will you tell us about the impact this will have on the nonprofits in Santa Cruz that take care of so many people who have a hard time making it?
Well, every nonprofit that has employees, obviously, is now going to have to raise more money. But there are a couple of nonprofits for whom the impacts are very significant. And Neil already talked about Hope Services, which does a lot of work in our community, and they would be very severely affected. By the way, their funding from the state has not increased in 10 years and would not increase as a result of this action in the city of Santa Cruz. So their costs just go up, and it makes their fundraising much more, you know, more difficult. They have to raise more money. Now, I'm board chair of Goodwill Industries, and Goodwill Industries' mission is to prepare people for the workforce. And it's often working with those people – who are difficult to employ, who have had a tough time of it for one reason or another. They're looking to get into the workforce and then to progress in some in a career. And it would cost Goodwill Industries to comply with this, we know, well into the six figures. Now, we as a board have not analyzed that and not prepared to give a specific number, but we know that it's going to be a very significant impact. So if it does, and that's why Goodwill Industries is helping to fund the study that we've talked about this morning. Should that study show the impacts to be as severe as we think that it is, and Goodwill will analyze then the impact specifically on itself and then be prepared to take a position on the issue. But at this point, one of the things that we know that we must prepare for is the possible discussion of should Goodwill's headquarters in its tri-county responsibilities continue to be in Santa Cruz, or would it be smart and financially smart in light of the mission that we have to serve to move to another place in the county. So that is something we certainly don't want to do, but I just want to emphasize that the effect of this proposal can be very, very different than what the proposers hope it will be.
Good intentions. Mike, you got a quick follow-up before we go to the rest of the callers?
Yeah, I would just question their intentions. People have ways of being very nice while stabbing people in the back. They can do it with a smile on their face. They have their front line all figured out to make it sound good and attractive to others. But these are not nice people. That's my last word. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much. Let's go to Richard in Watsonville, one of our favorites.
Hey,
Richard,
Mike.
Welcome to the Saturday special.
Thank you very much. What is the boundary lines of what, city limits?
Right, this is a
right.
Exactly.
This is
only in the city of Santa Cruz.
So only the people in the city of Santa Cruz are going to vote on this?
Right.
How long do you think it's going to be before the county passes the law or the other cities?
They won't be able to.
Not at all,
this
huh?
This can only be done by chartered cities.
But Watsonville, I believe,
is not a chartered city?
I think Watsonville is a chartered city.
Yeah.
And the
I think Scotts Valley is too, isn't it?
Well, the proponents have said, to counter the argument that Santa Cruz is going to be left an island, is that if they pass in Santa Cruz, that they're going to go to Capitola and Watsonville and Scotts Valley.
Bring them on. They're in for a big surprise. But the thing that gets me, Neil, is you know these people. Or at least you say you know who these people are.
Yeah, I do.
Well, who are they?
Well,
why don't you start naming names, Neil?
Well, they're the people that they invited to come on here.
I'll name the names.
Yeah, I want to hear these clowns that would not show up, these people that are pushing for all this stuff.
Okay, these are the
people. And I want to know what kind of money they're making, don't you, Mike?
Okay, these are the people that KSCO executive producer Rosemary Chalmers has tried to bring into the program today. These are the people that are sponsoring or in backing this initiative. Tony Madrigal, Emily Riley, Tim Fitzmaurice, I think Ed Porter's in there too, and Nora Hockman. And we tried time after time after time after time to bring them to the conversation, and not one of them responded, once.
There's also
all but one are on the city council.
Well, there's also a professor at the University, David Sweet, Jane Weed, a former mayor of Santa Cruz, and her husband Ron Pomerantz are involved
in this. There you go, Neil. Come on, spit it out, man. This is like an exorcism.
Now, listen, I disagree with
friends.
The previous
these
caller.
Friends,
I disagree
Neil.
With you. These are good people that have contributed to the community.
That's right. They're your
friends. They may be, they may have a proposition here that's not healthy for the community, but they aren't bad people in this community.
No, it's just a proposition you don't like.
Yeah.
I mean, is your business up on the block for this or what?
On the block? What is that?
Yeah, I mean, if this goes through, are you going to move out of town?
No, they both said they were survivors.
I have a lease until 2020, so.
So you can last that long?
Well, I don't know. There's other things that affect me other than this single thing, but, I have gotten through an earthquake. I've gotten through the dot-com bust. And,
you've even been on city councils. I know all that stuff, but. Here's your own friends. It's almost like Steve Hartman and Mike Rockin becoming friends. I never thought I'd see that day.
Richard, thank you so much for calling and
take care.
Throwing some gasoline on the fire today here. Let's go to John in Santa Cruz. John, welcome to the Saturday special.
I've been hearing you asking several times why anybody would want to pay more money somewhere else. like
yeah,
go across
why, the street. Why would somebody, for example, want to buy a dollar Pacific cookie in Santa Cruz when they can
right.
buy a 90-cent Pacific cookie
exactly.
in Capitola?
So why would someone want to pay twice as much money for organic coffee or organic produce? Mm-hmm. Or why would somebody want to wait a week to get a book that Bookshop Santa Cruz can't stock when they can buy it at Borders? Why would you not want a Walmart in Santa Cruz? Stuff like that. I mean...
Come on, come bring it to us. This is interesting.
I mean, it's a good point to talk about. I'm not sure if I agree with, like, the letter of the proposition right now, but we need to talk about how socially conscious Santa Cruz is with their money,
mm-hmm.
and that's something that might not show up on a financial report, for instance.
Well, I think you're right. I mean, I've been in the situation where a big chain came in 5.5 years ago, and there's a number of people that are very loyal bookshop consumers, and they come and they don't shop at Borders. But I tell you, you know, in the long run, the price of items has a significant impact on people. It's not like, you know, there's not people in the community that have to watch their dollars, and they'll go there, and, you know, we share a lot of customers with Borders. That's,
right,
you know,
yeah.
and people go there. So I appreciate the people who make decisions based on whether, like, with the organic things, it's health or it's a social conscious, you know, it's one of the real positives about Santa Cruz.
Yeah.
But
right.
we're talking about a big tourist base that doesn't have those loyalties, maybe doesn't have that concerns, and also, in general, people have to shop where it makes sense to them. And so I understand your point, and I think that is a valid point, but I also think that the price of things has a significant impact.
It does. I think there might be enough of a base in Santa Cruz of people like that to keep businesses opening here and keep people going to them. So
well,
I'm
you
not
know,
sure.
John, I really agree with you. You know, I always encourage on my Food Chain radio program, which airs at 9 o'clock in the morning. If anybody ever wakes up that early, they can
right.
tune in. I always encourage people to buy food with its farmer's face on it.
Not only
for the nutritional qualities, but also for this whole notion of we have to protect those family farmers, because who knows what's going to happen down the line, and we might need them to feed us. And
right.
similarly with local businesses, too. You know?
Seems like a similar point, really. I mean, if anybody would ever want to pay more money for anything for that reason, then that would be what would keep business going in Santa Cruz, even mm-hmm. though it costed more. And people would maybe want to open businesses here because they knew that the wage was really high.
John, thank you so much for the call.
Yeah, sure.
Appreciate it. Let's run to Gordy up there in the San Lorenzo Valley. Gordy, welcome to the Saturday special.
Good morning. I'd like to point out the big picture here.
We like big pictures.
Well, the big picture here is the county. Individually in Santa Cruz, they're acting against business. Up here in the mountains, as you well know, the forestry industry has been shut down. Those lands have been converted over through the Sempervirens and other organizations, converted over to public property where they lose the tax base. By doing this custom-tailored job here in Santa Cruz, making it difficult for the small business owners to survive by having to increase the pay for their employees, they are indeed going to be driving businesses out of Santa Cruz. And as a consequence of this, the tax revenues generated by those businesses will no longer be available. Their properties will have to go up for sale. And again, those lands will be, you know, converted into parks or other public properties at the cost of the rest of the citizens in this county. And individually here in Santa Cruz. Also here in San Lorenzo Valley, there's a takeover of the water system, a privately owned water system. This is the big picture, is we are losing ownership of businesses. We are losing ownership of land. It's going on to public listing where they can't generate any tax revenues at all. And the rest of us have to pick up that.
Well, we're certainly seeing that in Santa Cruz with the University of California.
Yeah.
We're losing tax base. Yeah.
One solution here, it's only a small part of the solution, is to de-annex all state-operated properties, such as UC. Take them out of...
of the food chain.
Take them out of Santa Cruz. Yeah, take them out of Santa Cruz. You know, cut them out.
Okay.
They
you know, that's been a suggestion that we've heard a couple times today, right? Mm-hmm. I'm going to have to go to another line, Gordy, but we thank you for tuning in.
Thank you very much, Michael.
All right, appreciate it. Let's go to Rich in Salinas. Rich, welcome to the Saturday special.
Yeah, good morning. Now, I had two questions. One is of the group of, I think you said 47 that are sponsoring this study, how many of those people own businesses are going to either have to quit or move out of the city? And will the study also indicate how many other businesses in the community are going to have to do both those things?
Cool. Let's pass that one around. Good question. Neil, let's start with you.
Well, part of what we asked Civic Economics to look at is the impact on businesses. And we don't know the answers. You know, we have concerns, we have fears. But, you know, by the end of April, beginning of May, we should have some answers as to whether or not people are going to adapt by cutting benefits, whether they'll move, they'll plan on moving out of the city, plan on laying people off. I mean, we'll start to get some answers, and that's what's important.
How about out of the group that's funding the study, though? Has that been discussed?
No, that hasn't been discussed. It's okay. I don't think you're fine.
What would they say? I mean, who among us is going to die if this goes through?
Well, if it goes through, it'll have significant impact on all of us.
People make plans, and this is part of making a plan.
That's true. I have not heard anyone make the statement that this will put me out of business. We're all pretty tough survivors. We'll find a way. It may take a while. Maybe that will be the effect on some businesses, but I don't think anybody plans on January 1st, 2007 to lock their doors
and
walk away.
I mean, you guys have been around. You guys are survivors. What about the people who are just starting businesses?
Well, that's a question. That's an unknown because if somebody's going to start a business, will they seek a location that that doesn't have every year their payroll going up and up and up, regardless of the circumstances? I have a feeling that Live Oak is going to be a good investment for commercial property.
Okay. John or Rich, let's see, who am I talking to? I'm talking with...
Yeah. Yeah, that's Rich. No, thank you. I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Good question, though. Great question. Mm-hmm. Let's go quickly to John. And, John, welcome to the Saturday special. Fire away.
Well, thank you very much, and good morning, lady and gentlemen.
Good morning.
You got it right.
thanks for the invitation to call back. I have
to mention the fact that John held on for like 30 minutes, so mm-hmm. Welcome back, John.
Well, actually, I was on for a while, then I dropped off, and then I came back. And then I dropped myself off by not knowing how to operate my phone, which is a problem I've heard you have a few times, but in the past, not today. Anyway, the issue is an incredibly important issue. It's a macro issue for all of Santa Cruz, and I'm a consultant, small business. It's an issue that I deal with all the time, and I have a background in the topic and the subject. But I think it's very important for your guests to take a look at how they approach the fight, because it's going to be a fight. The way they're talking, I think they're convinced that this is an economic issue, that it's a financial issue, that it's a business issue, and that's natural because that's the way they're going to think about it. But in fact, it's a political issue. This has been brought by politicians who have an agenda and who are backed by people that are either naive, and I would put the university students who back them in that category, or who are absolutely deaf to the economic effect because they believe that they can legislate the marketplace.
So you talked about this is going to be a fight. How should they fight it?
Well, I think the... study that they have commissioned is interesting. I mean, it would be interesting to know how many people, for example, in the city are actually below this $9 and some cents rate, how many people it's actually going to affect, how many jobs will be lost, how many businesses will move to Aptos. It would be interesting to know all of that, but your audience doesn't care about any of that. So I don't think you're going to win the battle
using economic parameters, which nobody believes. You had a caller earlier who said basically that wherever the minimum wage had been increased, the liars would forecast the dire effects on the community. And those effects never came about because the businessmen and women are smart enough and tough enough and strong enough to compensate, to find ways around it, to change the structure of their businesses, to find new vendors, to expand their customer base, to improve their quality, and they survive. And I've heard you say, your guests say, that you're survivors. And so what you'll do is survive. And the people that you're fighting know that. So
they're doomed? Is that what you're saying? So that there's no way to stop this? Is that what you're telling us?
No, I think you have to take a different tact. It's time for creativity, and it's also time to understand that the agenda that they are proposing here, the agenda that they have, and the fix for that agenda that they are proposing is ideological. It's political, and they're playing to their base. And you have to fight them on the battlefield, because by fighting them off of the battlefield, it's a guaranteed loser. You only have to look at San Francisco and Berkeley to understand that.
John, what would you suggest we do?
Yeah.
What would you suggest we say to the
enough.
Electorate? What's that?
I said, I wish I were smart enough to give you a rational, thoughtful answer. The question that you're asking requires some very, to get an answer to that question, requires some very knowledgeable, very bright people to sit down in a room and probably take several hours to strategize how to deal with the specific or the specific action that you would need to take to deal with this particular assault.
You know, they need a marketing campaign.
I don't have a good answer for you.
They need a marketing campaign. Oh, that's what warfare is all about. Is
yeah, I think a political marketing campaign would be a component of this, yes. Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I think the idea that we find out what the real effects are and we talk to the voters, you know, as best we can and educate them, I really have a belief in the Santa Cruz voter will start to understand what the issues are. And it was defeated on the ballot in Santa Monica, you know, by sitting there and saying, look at, yeah, we will figure out a way to survive, but does that mean instead of offering medical coverage in 90 days when people go to work for your business, you get offered after a year or really cut down and it's only catastrophic care that you know, there are consequences to this. And people, you know, they have jobs. They can understand that. They know what it means. And I really believe that we'll run a very effective campaign. And then we'll see, hopefully, that we'll have a good outcome.
Know the truth, and the truth shall set you free.
You said something that's very interesting to me, and that is that they defeated it in Santa Monica. Do you know how they defeated it?
Yes,
and why?
It's a secret. Besides that, we're out of time, John, so I guess you can't learn the secret. So thank you for tuning in and calling in. Great comment. Tom, I'm not going to be able to get to you because we're simply out of time, but thank you for hanging in there. 8 minutes and 50 seconds. I appreciate it anyway. Gosh, Neil Coonerty Bookshop Santa Cruz, Larry Pearson Pacific Cookie Company, Cindy Geis Restaurant Avante. Where do we go from here, Neil? You have 20 seconds.
Well, we're going to keep trying to get answers to questions because the proponents haven't asked us questions yet.
Barry.
We'll be back hopefully in late April to present to the community the results of the study, and then we'll start to have that community conversation that we've been waiting for.
Cindy?
Right. Hopefully, right. Talking, learning, educating.
Okay, folks, this has been the Saturday special. Michael Olson, very pleased to sit in for Michael's Whirling today, and hope you all had a good time. Give you something to chew on and think about, and what will happen to our business community if we raise the minimum wage 37% plus put a mandatory cost of living increase every year from here to eternity.
That's all, folks.
Could you dance?
1480 KSEO Santa Cruz, it's 12 noon.
That's what Iran has, to comply, to come clean, to get out of the doghouse, the international doghouse. In 1 month's time, we'll hear one more report from the IAEA, and then at that time, the UN Security Council can act, and the range of options is wide, from reprimand to political sanctions to economic sanctions and even the military option.
Fox's Greg Palcott. Iran continues to claim its uranium enrichment program is for...